Good afternoon. You are listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM and HD. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 52 degrees here in Kodiak under overcast skies. The wind's out of the east at 7 miles per hour. And we're looking for pretty much the same this afternoon with a high near 57. Coming up here in about 30 seconds, we will have the Emergency Services Director's Update coming to you live. And probably we'll hear a little bit more about that third case of COVID-19 that was announced yesterday. That should be coming up just shortly. Partly cloudy for tonight with a low around 47, south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today, June 11th, 2020. My name is Mike Twenge. I'm the Kodiak Area Emergency Services Director, and with me today are members of the Emergency Services Council. The Department of Health and Social Services has reported 70 cases of this nasty virus in the past 4 days. The past 4 days, everybody. We are seeing consistent increases each day. And reported recently, there's been 11 deaths. This virus wants a host. The way to avoid this disease is to social distance. Of course, wash your hands and wear a mask that covers your nose and mouth. Locally, the healthcare professionals have conducted 1,201 COVID-19 cases. Yesterday, the Emergency Operations Center announced a third positive COVID-19 case in Kodiak. At that time, there was very little information available beyond what was reported. Today, we have more details about this individual. And once again, we have Public Health Nurse Elsa DeHart here to provide this update for you. Elsa?
Oh, thanks, Mike. Yeah, we did have another case reported yesterday in Kodiak. Originally, we had thought this was somebody who had traveled very recently, but it was somebody who had traveled a couple months ago. So that's not a concern at this time, although it is a concern because that does mean that this case was most likely a community transmission. So we do have the virus out there in Kodiak, and I hope everybody's being pays attention and does just what Mike was talking to us about. For this case, all of they've completed the investigation, and all of the close contacts have been contacted. And so if you haven't been contacted, you don't need to worry, except that everybody should always be monitoring for symptoms and watching. And if you do get sick, please go see your healthcare provider and get tested. Testing's very available right now on the island. So, and remember, you know, a positive is a positive. And of course, a negative only is a point in time and means that there's no virus detected at that moment. So thanks, Mike.
Okay, that's number three in Kodiak. So we all need to be careful here. The motor vessel Tustamina arrived in Kodiak last Wednesday with 59 passengers and 35 crew aboard. If you are familiar with this sailing, you know there were 7 crew members tested positive aboard the Tustamina. Kodiak Harbor staff wore masks the entire time during the Kodiak stop. The stop in Kodiak had 20 passengers disembark while the remaining passengers continued out to Unalaska. Because of potential exposure, Dr. Joe McLaughlin, the state epidemiologist, through the Alaska Department of Transportation, reported that out of an abundance of caution, the state of Alaska is recommending that anyone who was on the ferry follow the guidance listed for 14 days after leaving the Tustamina. Those are: wear a mask or face covering when in public, minimize exposure to others as much as possible, and self-monitor for symptoms twice a day and get tested for COVID-19 if any symptoms arise. We've been hearing this message forever, and it seems like something we're all likely aware of in this pandemic environment. The governor's health mandate 10.1 concerning international and interstate travel has been revised again since we last reported, and I encourage you to contact the Emergency Operations Center Public Information Office at 486-8970 or look it up on the State of Alaska website under coronavirus.alaska.gov. There is a mandatory declaration form for interstate travelers. If you're coming up from any lower 48 states, be sure to check the regulations. There's been an average of 80 plus arrivals and departures at the Kodiak Airport this past week. So please check the health mandates prior to traveling to avoid unnecessary delays or restrictions while en route. This week, we met with officials of Alaska Airlines about concerns with passengers arriving in Kodiak, namely support by the airline in reducing the potential for community spread of the virus from arriving passengers. Flights will continue, so how do we work together? The outcome of the meeting was to work together to continue public awareness of prevention and sharing of information to protect our community. This included information placed at the terminal to remind arriving passengers to take the recommended precautions and follow the state guidelines. Currently, we're told there's messaging announcements on the aircraft about this health risk. Passengers are required to wear a mask while on board. So we've had some calls about vessels coming into our harbor, and what do we do if there's someone with positive cases on board? So the marine safety information is a requirement by the U.S. Coast Guard, and I'll read a little bit of some of the precautions that they take. So vessels arriving to or traveling between any U.S. port or place must follow reporting and infection control measures to maintain the safety of personnel aboard vessels as well as within the port. So over the weekend, on Sunday, we had a report of a 200-foot catcher processor potentially coming in from Dutch Harbor. They were about 10 hours out of Kodiak, and they called to ask if there was any procedure that they must follow if they had a positive case on board, which likely they did. We notified them of our procedures in our harbor, and of course the Coast Guard has this very defined procedure, and they decided to bypass Kodiak. So there's protections in place for vessels coming into our harbor that must be reported. The vessel reporting requirements are illness of a person on board any vessel that may adversely affect the safety of a vessel or port facility is a hazardous condition per 33 CFR 160.216 and must be reported immediately to the U.S. Coast Guard captain of the port. This applies to all vessels departing from or arriving to any port or place in the U.S., including internal waters, the territorial seas, and deep water ports. So that's all covered, so people can relax about that one. At this point, the Emergency Operations Center is not distributing cloth face masks at set locations as we previously had. We feel we're pretty much saturated in this distribution. However, if you do need a mask or several masks, please feel free to contact the Emergency Operations Center for a free mask. We want everyone to have a mask, and they are still available if needed. Groups that have events planned are encouraged to request masks if needed. Again, the EOC number is 486-8970. With summer here, there are many outdoor activities available to us, and I encourage everyone to take the time for yourselves, your friends, and family to shake off some of this pandemic stress and enjoy what Kodiak has to offer. You'll see the banner behind me. There are more and more banners being placed around town, reminding the community to social distance, wear masks, and wash your hands. There's one behind me, like I said. So kids, if you're riding around with mom and dad, see how many banners you can spot. Because next week I will be announcing the rules of an exciting contest you kids will be eligible to enter. So listen next week for details and enter to win. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening in, and we'll return again next Thursday at noon for another live community update. Stay safe, please.
morning, Kodiak. Or rather, good afternoon. It's 12.09 p.m. today. In Kodiak, it's 52 degrees and overcast. Today should be mostly sunny, highs near 57, and southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 47, and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday should be mostly sunny, highs near 57. Sunshine on Saturday as well, also a high near 57. In Homer today, it's 50 degrees. Today's sunny with a high near 63. Calm winds becoming southwest around 5 miles per hour. And up in Anchorage, 53 degrees, just a few clouds out. Today, isolated showers after 1 p.m. Partly sunny and highs near 63 degrees. Calm winds becoming west around 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. And a 20% chance of precipitation. Tonight in Anchorage, mostly cloudy, lows around 46 degrees. West winds around 5 miles per hour, becoming calm after midnight. Friday, isolated showers after 4 p.m., partly sunny and highs near 65. Quick look at the marine forecast for today. From Marmot Island to Sikkenak, today variable winds of 10 knots with seas at 4 feet. That's continuing on through tonight and Friday. Chiniac Bay, today variable winds of less than 10 knots, becoming southeast 15 knots in the afternoon with seas at 3 feet. And tonight, south winds of 15 knots diminishing to 10 knots after midnight, seas at 2 feet. Marmot Bay today, variable winds of less than 10 knots, becoming southeast 15 knots in the afternoon with seas at 4 feet. And tonight, southeast winds of 15 knots, becoming south 10 knots after midnight, seas at 4 feet. You're listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM.
KMXT's Midday Report is provided by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, featuring children's clothing from the Tea Collection, home spa items from Crabtree and Evelyn, and leather handbags by Dooney and Burke. Special orders of the Tea Collection clothing in your child's size always welcome at Artinger's. 486-5554.
And now look at local and statewide news. A third round of testing is expected to start today at the Providence Transitional Care Center in Anchorage as health officials continue to try to contain Alaska's largest coronavirus outbreak. At least 43 of the center's patients and caregivers have tested positive for COVID-19 so far. One of the patients has died, and Dr. Michael Berenstein, Providence's chief medical officer in Alaska, says other patients have been hospitalized with the disease. At least one was in very serious condition on Wednesday.
It's humbling how transmissible this virus is.
Berenstein says the center stopped allowing visitors in March and enacted strict procedures to try to keep the virus out after watching the disease tear through long-term care facilities in other states, including Washington.
At least a third of the deaths in the U.S. from COVID are from inhabitants, residents of long-term care facilities. And particularly following the outbreak at Life Care in Kirkland, that was really a warning cry to all of us.
Patients usually spend weeks at the transitional center in Anchorage to recover from serious illness, injury, or surgery before heading home or to assisted living. In late May, one of the center's patients developed a fever and cough and tested positive for COVID-19. Berenstein says he believes the patient got sick at the center, but he doesn't know exactly how.
We know that it had to come in from the outside, and so the two main ways that would happen would be either one or more caregivers could have acquired it in the community and brought it in, or a new resident that we could have taken could have brought it in.
After the first confirmed case, Providence tested hundreds of caregivers and patients. Berenstein says too many positive cases came back to pinpoint the source of the spread. Patients who have tested positive are now quarantining in their rooms. They're all in one wing of the center. Employees with the disease are staying home. That has created a staffing shortage at the center. Berenstein says Providence has moved about half a dozen patients to the St. Elias Specialty Hospital in Midtown. The transitional center also shares a campus in East Anchorage with a long-term care facility for older people called Providence Extended Care. One employee there who was not showing symptoms has tested positive for COVID-19 during the recent rounds of testing. Berenstein says Providence will continue to test patients and staff on the campus weekly until no new positive cases occur. Governor Mike Dunleavy expressed hope on Wednesday that dialogue in Alaska resulting from the death of George Floyd will lead to improvements.
I want to thank those young people that put these protests together. And I'm sincere when I say this, because I want to thank them because protesting and voicing your opinion, especially when you've seen injustice, is America. It's Alaskan. It's American, too. And there aren't going to be any changes for the good unless we have that dialogue.
Dunleavy was speaking for the second time during a COVID-19 news conference about Floyd's death. Floyd was a Black man who was killed while being arrested by Minneapolis police. Videos of his last moments has prompted protests across the country and throughout Alaska. Dunleavy didn't list specific changes he would advocate, but said he expects ideas to come from conversations between Alaskans from different backgrounds.
We're going to get there by working together to get there, by listening to others, by trying to understand their perspective, by trying to understand how they view life and how others view them, to be able to sit down and listen and then think through some things we can do, not just as individuals, but as government as well. Are there things we can do better and differently?
The governor says that the vast majority of law enforcement officers he's encountered are trying to help others. He described the reactions officers have had to Floyd's death.
The moment they saw that play out like the rest of us did, a number of them just, their head sunk. They put their head down. Because they knew at that moment that there would be a number of folks that would indict all law enforcement officers, paint them all with the same brush.
Dunleavy also addressed calls for defunding the police.
Folks have asked me, am I planning on defunding the police force? I'm not planning on defunding the police force. As a matter of fact, most Americans do not support that and understand the value of our law enforcement officers.
He said the state's crime rate is high relative to other states, adding that it can improve. Continuing protests has kindled a national conversation about racism and excessive force by law enforcement, especially on racial minorities. In Alaska, that's resonated with Alaska Native families that have lost loved ones at the hands of police. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports. And as a warning, this story contains disturbing audio of fatal encounters with law enforcement.
Across Alaska, a growing outcry for police reform has galvanized many Alaska Natives. A rally in Ketchikan this month attracted hundreds of demonstrators, some carrying signs highlighting the fact that Native Americans are among racial groups most likely to be killed by police. Cody Eyre was shot to death 2.5 years ago by police in Fairbanks. He was 20 years old. His sister, Samantha Eyre Harrison, says even people she was close to didn't really know what to say.
There were a lot of people that felt really uncomfortable with the subject of officer-related deaths and, you know, police brutality.
Then the sights and sounds of George Floyd's life slipping away at the hands of Minneapolis police shocked the nation's conscience.
And suddenly overnight it became okay to talk about things that maybe before it wasn't okay to talk about, like police brutality and talking about racism, topics that were tough to discuss.
Alaska's relatively small population makes it difficult to meaningfully compare the rate of police killings with other states or prove racial bias. That's because a small sample size can be skewed by just a few cases. The Washington Post built a database tracking fatal police encounters since 2015. In Alaska, 39 people have been killed by police. Of those, at least 9 were Alaska Native. But on the surface, while Alaska Natives only make up about 15% of the population, they're close to a quarter of all police killings in the state. Cody Eyre's killing remains controversial. He was carrying a loaded gun when he was shot, but relatives say he never threatened to harm anyone but himself.
Put the gun down, Cody!
Fairbanks police released an edited 11-minute video compiled from body cam and dash cam footage before 5 officers fired 40 shots in 2 volleys.
That video you were seeing of Cody Eyre down there, it was edited, Mayor, before you even seen it. It was edited.
That's the late social justice activist Frank Turney berating Fairbanks City Council for not investing more in non-lethal weapons for its police department. To date, the family says authorities still haven't released the full video footage taken by police.
There's a lot more to that story, but shoot a man 40 bullets in him? 40 bullets?
State prosecutors cleared the 3 state troopers and 2 Fairbanks police officers that fired their weapons. A family member of another suicidal Alaska Native killed by police in Fairbanks addressed the city council that same evening.
My husband had a gun to his head. Why would they shoot a person who was contemplating suicide?
That man was Kevin McNulty. His death came 15 months after Cody Eyre's. The 2 cases have parallels. Both were Alaska Native men in their 20s. Both were armed and intoxicated and threatening to kill themselves in a public place. A bystander shot footage of the March 31st, 2019 standoff in the McDonald's parking lot.
There's a guy with a gun to his head right there in the green car to the far to the left. Cars are sitting here with their guns drawn out, and they keep on telling him to put the gun down, take it away from his head, and he's screaming no.
His wife, Lisa McNulty, shared the video of his final minutes on social media in late May.
He pointed at his head, he shot up in the air once, and he got shot 13 times.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
She says the outcry over police violence in recent weeks has sparked renewed interest and sympathy for her family. The video has thousands of views. Kevin McNulty left behind two young children, and she prefers to think of happier times when they were together, like this moment in 2015 when he sings along to a pop song on the radio. But she said he also struggled with drugs and alcohol. He was in treatment for more than a year, but he kept drinking, and the relationship frayed.
He asked me for a ride, like an hour before, and I was like, no, I can't do it, I'm sorry, because I was tired of his drinking.
An official report says that during the standoff with officers, he goaded police to kill him. But he also asked them to call a Fairbanks police officer he knew by name, and his wife. He gave officers a phone number to call. The report says the officer he wanted to talk to wasn't on duty at the time. His wife says she didn't get a call until after he was dead.
They should have tried harder.
Until this month, Lisa McNulty hadn't seen the state's report clearing the officers, and she's been asking for it. Records requests with University Police, Alaska State Troopers, and Fairbanks Police seeking body cam and dash cam footage and police reports were filed by her attorney months ago. I asked the Department of Law whether the use of deadly force was justified. Little more than an hour later, a 9-page report clearing the officers appeared in my inbox. It says Kevin McNulty's erratic statements, coupled with a loaded gun and close proximity of fast food diners, meant police were justified in shooting him when they did. His family didn't know about that report, even though it came out more than 7 weeks ago. The state says that was an oversight and has since shared its findings with Lisa McNulty.
Well, if that is truly what happened, and then I have no reason to believe it didn't, you know, then it was a failure on the trooper's part.
That's Walt Monaghan. He's a former Anchorage police chief and 2-time commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, which oversees Alaska State Troopers. From patrolman to chief, he's been involved with mental health crises and their aftermath.
You try to isolate and get the individual to calm down, and sometimes it does work. We've done it. I've seen it done in my career.
He says even if a police officer's use of deadly force is justified,
it doesn't replace the tragedy that had taken place. I mean, individuals who are shot or otherwise killed, that they have loved ones, they have friends, they have family that all want answers. And I can't argue with that. I would want them if I were in the situation too.
Measuring something as subjective as racism is difficult. But when it comes to police encounters, researchers have shown consistently that Native Americans, including Alaska Natives, are more likely to be killed by officers than their white peers. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
President Trump has ordered his administration to get a new fleet of icebreakers on the way by 2029. The memorandum Trump signed on Tuesday advances an agenda Congress and the Coast Guard are already pursuing to build 3 heavy and 3 light icebreakers, and it speeds up the timeline. The memo also orders the Homeland Security Department to study the benefits of leasing an icebreaker until the new ships are built. Alaska Congressman Don Young pressed that idea in 2016. He wanted the Coast Guard to lease an icebreaking tug from Edison Choest, a company whose owners and employees are major donors to his reelection campaign. The government of Finland also has icebreakers for lease. The president's memo raises the possibility the new icebreakers may have an Alaska home port. It orders a study of 2 optimal U.S. locations. The Coast Guard has only 1 heavy icebreaker in operation right now, and its home port is in Seattle. The memo cites national security as the main reason the United States needs icebreakers. It says they should also be considered for commercial missions, including resource exploration and undersea cable maintenance.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. The Young Fishermen's Act advances in Congress. More after this.
Grundon's urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Your CSF purchases will help U.S. fishing towns thrive. Grundon's, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
Over 30% of fishermen deaths in Alaska are from falling overboard. Life jackets save lives, and today's models fit right into your work gear. Learn more at amsea.org.
For decades, the federal government has funded programs to help train young farmers, ranchers, even aquaculturists. Funding was $15 million for this fiscal year and is set at $25 million by 2023. The nation's farmers of the sea are hoping for a similar helping hand from Uncle Sam. It's far smaller, $2 million over 6 years, paid for by fishing fines. A Young Fishermen's Development Act, introduced by Alaska's congressional delegation, is hoping to get some traction.
Young fishermen not only have to know how to catch fish, they have to keep track of a fairly complex regulatory world in fisheries. And as small businessmen, they also have to be able to make sound decisions about how to grow their businesses.
Linda Benkin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association in Sitka, one of a national coalition pushing for federal options. The grants would be open to associations, tribes, universities, and others to train and mentor young fishermen. ALFA's Crew Apprenticeship Program is an example. Tara Racine is program director.
Where young individuals can get out on boats with mentor fishermen, and we also provide some onshore training, such as business and marketing and the actual fishing and sustainable practices and stewardship.
The Young Fishermen's Act passed unanimously out of the House Natural Resources Committee and is awaiting a vote on the House floor. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods, who salutes and says thanks to the men and women fishing across Alaska for their hard work and dedication. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements. Welcome to this noon edition of the Island Messenger. We are a bit short on time because of the Emergency Services Center message this morning, so I'm going to jump right into tides. Today, let's see, low tide will be at 1 p.m. for Kodiak, 0.09 feet, high tides at 7:52 p.m., 6.47 feet. Over on the west side, low tide is going to be at 1:28 p.m., 0.79 feet, high tides at 8:05 p.m., 12.24 feet. It's time for a few community announcements. Looking at the Kodiak Management Area and Chignik Salmon Weir counts, cumulative escapement through June 10th, so that was yesterday. Karluk sockeye, 12,563, Chinook, 84, and steelhead down, 61. Again, that's the count as of yesterday, cumulative. Litnick sockeye, 840, and Buskin River sockeye, 144, steelhead down for Buskin River at zero still. More and more, it seems commercial fishery news in Alaska deals with the coronavirus pandemic and COVID-19. This week is no exception on the Alaska Fisheries Report. Small coastal Alaskan towns prepare for swarms of fishermen and others who may bring the highly contagious COVID-19 disease with them from outside of Alaska or even from other areas of the state. We look at the Washington State factory trawler, where three-fourths of its 120-member crew has tested positive for COVID-19. Also, Bristol Bay communities don't have enough medical facilities to handle a big outbreak of COVID-19. Help came by way of an evangelical Christian organization, which flew in a field hospital out to the Bristol Bay borough. And finally, a letter to fishermen outlines the rules for fishing this summer. All that coming up this week on the this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. The Alaska Fisheries Report is produced here at KMXT. You can listen to it on Fridays at 5:20 during the evening news and on Saturday at 12:15 during the midday report. Kana, Alaska Sea Grant, and Shunack Tribe of Kodiak strongly advise against eating personally harvested shellfish in the Kodiak region at this time. They're seeing elevated levels of toxins. PSP, or paralytic shellfish poisoning toxins, increased dramatically in the summer and remain through the fall in the Kodiak region. This is due to the naturally occurring toxic phytoplankton that bloom in warm water. All bivalve shellfish, clams, cockles, and mussels, predatory snails, and the digestive tissues of crabs can accumulate PSP toxins. People are at risk from eating personally harvested and untested shellfish. PSP toxins cannot be removed by cooking, freezing, or soaking shellfish. Early symptoms of PSP include tingling, numbness, and nausea, and can progress rapidly to respiratory distress. If you feel any symptoms after eating untested shellfish, call 911 or go to your local clinic immediately. Please remember, commercially harvested shellfish is regulated and safe for consumption. For more information, contact Andy Wall at 907-486-1313 or Julie Matwayu at 907-486-1514. And I think we're going to jump really quick into the ADF&G announcement, and then we'll be on to Spotlight.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 1, date issued 10 a.m. on June 6th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 9th, until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 11th in the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing at noon Tuesday, June 9th, and remain open until further notice. The Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, Duck Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine deer in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821, and in Katoy Bay to the fish and game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course the most recent salmon information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour quarterphone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.